see these motherfuckers, they want the juice. They come every single time. But I'm the tree. I bear the fruit season after season after season.
I want to start off by just welcoming you, Rajakumari, to Brown Game Strong podcast. Such an honor to have you. You are out there doing all the things, I think, for the community, but also wider than that. And I think we're going to talk about that because there's obviously so much talk about, like, you know, the brown girl era and like what it means to be a Desi girl. And like, are you, you know, is it different if you're brought up in the diaspora versus if you're in India? And like, are the experiences very different? Are they similar? So I feel like we get lost in that. I think I probably started this platform with that sort of thing in mind, but it's evolved. And I think we've evolved. And I can see that in your music. So I want to start off by just asking you, like, where do you think you have grown the most in the last decade in your career?
I think my music has always been about understanding my identity. Like, I kind of played it out in front of everyone. You know, in the beginning, the first album, you know, the cover was the American flag across my face. And that was in response to what was happening politically in America and how I felt. And you know, the American dream meaning one thing with my parents coming from India in the 70s with literally a few dollars in their pocket and, you know, becoming very successful in America. And I, you know, being the recipient of the American dream, you know, what that meant to me. And then, you know, just kind of waking up to the world in a lot of ways. And that was the first album. And, you know, I made that cover and I made it reminiscent of the Afghani portrait, you know, the National Geographic. That's like such a famous image. And I felt like this is the face of America, you know, like you wanted the best and the brightest to come here and build this country. And now to question, you know, it was about questioning my entire perception of reality and who I was and what I stood for. One thing that was always important to me because of my upbringing, because of my, not just my upbringing, my training in classical dance at such a young age, like a lot of people in the diaspora, you know, we don't have access to the gurus, you know, like we don't get access to these like experiences that happen in India where you get one degree from the source of like a real classical culture. And, you know, I had a very unique childhood, but where my mom always wanted to be a classical dancer when she was growing up, they didn't have, you know, the funds for that. It wasn't something feasible. And, you know, she got married young and she put all her dreams into her family. And I feel like she always wanted a daughter that was going to be a dancer. That was the extent of her dream. The rest of the dream came with me, but you know, she wanted a daughter that was a dancer. And you know, I started very young and my first Arangetram was 7 years old. And I tell people my first career was 6 years old to like, about like, I think it came 6 years old to like 17. And then I started making music, you know? So like, that was my first, you know, career. And I feel like my guru, basically the same teacher that she wanted to learn from, imagine my mom's manifestation power. She meets her now that she's, you know, established in America, living the American dream, meets her much later and tells her about, you know, her young daughter, my guru, you know, my late guru now, but she came to my home when I was 6 years old, I danced for her. And she said that I was like a clay doll ready to be molded. And I was very lucky to be molded by one of the greatest, you know, gurus of all time in Kuchipudi classical, you know, one of the most decorated gurus. And she actually ended up living with us. You know, she had some changes in her life. Her husband had passed away. She was ready for a change. So she took that risk and moved to America and she trained me and I would dance 6 hours a day, you know? And now that I look back on my childhood, I realize, okay, that was like Olympics training. You know, I was literally training for the life that I have today. A lot of people see me getting my like glam done and they're like, how do you sit through it? I'm like, I've sat through it my entire life. Like 2 hours of makeup, pins, jewelry. And I feel like that part of my identity was always the main part of my identity. And so when it came to making my music and, you know, figuring out how to navigate this space, like being an adult and understanding that I was very Indian, but I also was very American, this concept of being the bridge started then. And I feel like through going to India, you know, I signed to a major recording label in America in 2015 and Epic, you know, to Sony, Epic Records. And that was an unimaginable feat, you know, like there was nobody South Asian really signed to major labels. But what I went through there, you know, they were like, you know, Indian girls don't rap, you know, you should be like this. I felt so much pressure when the thing was, my authenticity was what I had, you know, like I knew who I was and I knew that my classical dance could only take things to a platform that was a certain size. And when I was growing up watching pop stars, I saw them be so influential, you know, before an influencer, there were artists, you know. And when I was growing up, you know, doing my classical dance, the main focus was always philanthropy. You know, we were always raising money to build meditation halls or wings in hospitals. And so I very early understood that my art could translate into physical things and that it could help people and it could build things. So I knew there was so much value for my art. And, you know, when they told me that Indian girls are this and Indian girls are that, I was like, there's a hip hop movement happening in India and it's real and it's authentic. And I feel that I, you know, I can show you that you have the artist, you're ahead of everyone. That wasn't the case with the label. They didn't quite understand me, but it brought me to India. And, you know, I think that that, if I look back on my, you know, 10 years of my career, I would say that that was probably the most important decision, you know, that I made, that I decided that I didn't want to be a token. I didn't want to be put to the side and only express my culture in the ways that was comfortable to whatever perspective they were currently at. I mean, everything has changed now. So when I went to India and, you know, I released, it's funny, I released Mute without the label's permission, by the way. I just stuck their label like logo on it, put it up. They actually told me to take it down. I was like, fight me. Like I had to like go against everything because they wouldn't let my music out, you know? And they would keep saying, you don't have numbers. But I'm like, if you don't release anything, how can I have numbers? You know? So I had to like just literally breach my contract and self-release the come up. Now it says Epic. It was absorbed in later. You know, it says 2018 or 19, which is anyone that knows me knows it came out in 2016, you know, in the election year, like exactly what I'm saying, what it was in response to. And, you know, through that process of coming to India and feeling so accepted, I think in the diaspora, we grow up as the minority, as the other, and then all of a sudden being in a room where everyone was Indian. And like, if I was gonna do a music video for a song called Meera, which is a character from, you know, not a character, she is a poet, you know, and from the bhakti, like, you know, literature that wrote love songs about Krishna, and actually one of the first characters I ever played as a classical dancer. So the song was very special to me. And I made the video dressed as Meera, you know, in her orange robe. And I was like in front of a banyan tree. And I realized that like in America, there's so much explanation that has to go forward for that. But in India, people just understood where I was coming from. I could bring classical dancers on stage. I had the freedom to really explore, you know, classical dance. You create an entire world with just one body, one costume. I become every character. I can give you Kurukshetra, I can give you Krishna, I can give you Arjun, I can give you Draupadi. And I wanted to put that on stage somehow. And like, instead of trying to convince people to give me a spot at a club where I could sing one song and they're like, an Indian girl was here, I was like, I'm coming to India. I'm going to use the most beautiful fabrics. Like in America, I'm trying to replicate this place. Like, and it was very difficult moving to India. My family was not supportive of their only daughter. You know, they were, imagine in their perspective, I always say my dad, you know, worked so hard to move to America. And 40 years later, his daughter's moving back, like to India for opportunity. Like, it was a very, very crazy time. But I think the thing that's changed the most, that was sort of the original question, is from each album, it's been statements of where I am, you know, like in my identity and in myself as a woman, you know, like with the come up, it was about manifesting a dream that no one else saw, you know, just a dollar and a dream, now you're certified. Bloodline was in response to the patriarchy and the intensity that I was experiencing in India and the way that I had to get in my hyper masculine, like Shiva state in order to cut through for everyone else because they were not letting the girls through. So Bloodline is a very aggressive album and it's about what are you willing to do to protect and to fight for your dharm, like what you know is your purpose. HBIC is a project that came, you know, upon me leaving Mass Appeal. That was me exiting the major label circuit after 7 years, after Sony, after Universal, after Mass Appeal, after even Capitol at the end. you know, how many record deals I had. I left everybody to make Godmother Records because keeping God first, being a mother to the Kumari kids that are going to come behind me, the people that are, you know, that are watching and that are seeing me do these things and realizing they can, you know, HBIC, head bitch in charge. That was a statement. And I feel like now, you know, that was right before the pandemic, you know, it was like in that space. I know now that that was a very sad time for me because when I listen to it, I see that I'm fighting with two worlds, you know, like, do I belong here? Do I try to go to America now and try to, you know, do the original dream of making Indian culture mainstream so no little girl had to grow up, you know, feeling like they weren't beautiful, they weren't accepted like I felt, you know, like that was always the purpose. So HBIC was a project that was very hard for me to put out. It was my first independent project. I learned so much about expending my energy and what would return to me and the bridge. You know, we've arrived here where it really became during the pandemic that time to slow down. It made me go in my feminine.
Yeah.
I no longer had to be in my masculine because when you're fighting, it's saying that you don't believe that those things will be there. It's out of scarcity. And I think the bridge is that shift into full abundance mentality. Mm-hmm. It's this like, and it's also like, it's the process. Like the first half of the album is dealing with the darkness out inside the world. And, you know, Burn Babylon is talking about Maya and illusion of this world. And we were seeing it with our eyes. Like we were experiencing BLM. We were experiencing the COVID situation. We were experiencing shortages and the way people were behaving. And, you know, as a writer, you know, as an artist that has always kind of thought of things from this classical perspective, you know, I've studied religion, I've studied culture my whole life. I look at everything in Mahabharata, Ramayana space. I'm like, oh, this is the Rama of the moment. Like this, she's being Sita. Like I see everything like that. And I just feel like this album was about finding, but this album was about accepting my feminine power. And standing on that. And that's why this album really softens. Like, I think the whole second half of the album, people have never heard me like that. And the craziest thing is how I started. Actually, all my music as a writer was very feminine, very musical, but no one would let it through, you know? So the thing that's changed the most is that my confidence, you know, in myself has evolved so much to the point that, like, I won't let the Maya distract me. Like at any moment you can name 10 things you didn't get, you know, but it's kept me focused on my path is very different and I just have to stay it. That's it. Got to be the bridge from the East, from the West back to the East, you know, from ancient to the future. And music is the bridge between, you know, us and God. And I think this album really speaks about God again. Like I think Mira and Believe in You, which is the first album, I speak about God directly. Then I kind of feel like it leaves the project. I talk about NRI, I'm talking about identity. I use a lot of, you know, we were all talking about mangoes and curry in the beginning, Believe in Bangles. And I was dealing with a lot of those ideas. And then, you know, on this album, it just returned to God. It starts and begins.
Yeah, it goes back to the beginning of what we were talking about, which is I think there's been a shift and an evolution of how we, I guess, see ourselves as women, as Indian women. And one thing that I noticed in the Bridge album, yes, there is a transition from like, there's the darkness outside and I'm not going to let it come inside. Like, I know what you're doing and I'm not going to let you do it. And I know who I am. And I'm just going to do it anyway, like whatever I want to do. And that comes out. And then there's like this, you know, you have like Juice, which comes out as like a really fun, very femme kind of song, which I feel like I've never personally heard you do something like that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about where that element of like fun came from, like what inspired you to take us on this journey throughout this album in this way?
You know, it literally follows what I went through in the pandemic. It was like, yeah, the beginning was Babylon. That's the first record I wrote. Like basically 6 months, I couldn't make music. I convinced my friend Nacho, I had just met him. I convinced an engineer. I was like, hey, I'm COVID free. You said you're COVID free. Come over. Let's work. And I hired him that day. I offered him a job to like come every day and let's be a COVID pod and let's just make music because I didn't know what to do. So it starts in this darker place. But I think Also, I started therapy, you know, like I think like 1 month into the pandemic, I began seeing a therapist for the first time in my life. And I was able to deal with, you know, I guess so much of the identity I was projecting. I realized that Raja Kumari, the fierce warrior, was as a defense mechanism I created to protect baby Sveta. You know, I even had to make a new name, you know, because my name is actually Sveta Yella Pregada Rao, very South Indian name. And, you know, I always say like she was a classical dancer, you know, but like I'm back to being her again. But I think like through therapy, through understanding how much my inner child was, you know, damaged, and also some of the, you know, I feel right before the pandemic, had it kept going in that way, I don't know what would have happened to me, because I was like letting it burn on both sides. I had toxic relationships in my life. I had a lot of self-hatred I was very like, you know, I just was so hard on myself that my body was carrying that stress. And like, you know, I've been on a journey for a few years now of getting punch karma cleanses, you know, getting more focused on my meditation and my yoga, and understanding that my nervous system and my emotions are there for me. And I can't just be like running them rampant. And I feel like Juice was the turning point. Like, I was like, wait, like I can, like, I am sexy. I am fun. I am flirty. This shouldn't be something I never show people. And maybe people aren't understanding me because I'm only showing them my defense mechanism. Like, yeah. People love it, but they don't get me for some reason. Like, there's some disconnect. So I started opening it. Like, I think Juice was the first really fun, flirty song. And Colors is the first love song that I ever, you know, released. And, you know, Lovesick was actually written like a padam. It's like about Krishna, you know, like it's kind of written. Like, I remember doing these dances where you're like, oh, I've decorated myself, I've beautified myself, I'm waiting for you, where are you, Krishna? And so like, I just felt like I realized in love that this is something that I would do. I would become very obsessed with it. I realized now I know it's from like ADHD and like all these things I've understood, that you get these like attachments and these hyperfixations. So Lovesick is about my hyperfixation in love, and even identifying that has helped me kind of realize I do that. So like, this music is therapy. It was everything I was feeling. And the really, I think the special thing and the reason that you feel a shift is it was made with four people, only in a pod. Like, there were no label people around. There was none of my friends. I wasn't playing at parties saying, what do you guys think of this? It was just us. And, you know, some of the songs like Gods and Fearless, when they allowed us to go outside, I rented a cabin for my birthday in January 21 in the snow. And it was a beautiful cabin. And we made music in the living room there. We made those songs. And then, like, you know, that completely changed everything for us, you know, just making music with. And then we would go on to India and go to Goa. And like, I pulled my producer during the pandemic to India, and we were all there right before India closed. So it was very much like a project we made without anyone knowing about it. And I feel like that's why it's the most authentic thing I've released. You know, there's no A&Rs, no label heads, no features. There's no features.
I think it's relevant even today, Sveta, with everything that we're seeing going on in the world. I think this idea of, you know, still tapping into your inner self and sort of finding that peace within you, I think is very relevant. I mean, I don't know if you're watching the news. I'm watching the news every day. I'm looking on social media.
Of course I'm watching the news. I can't even, I'm so empathetic, and I'm like, my mind, my friends always tell me I don't like belong to regular reality. I don't ascribe to like what's happening here. I'm thinking of it on a global perspective, on a God perspective, on a good versus evil, on Kali Yuga. And I can't even open chips without thinking. I go, they have no food in Palestine. I wash my face, I go, they have no water. I try to go to sleep, I'm like, every time it gets dark in India, I go, it's going to be dark in Palestine in 4 hours. Like, I can't stop thinking about it. And it's so difficult to promote at a time like this. But then the same thing is, I know what I do when I get on stage. I channel the goddess, you know? I channel her like I did when I was a classical dancer. I bring her to stage and I try to show people that the goddess is in them, even in men. You know, we all have everything in us, but you know, this power is in you. And that's why I want people to come to the shows, because it's like, it isn't a big look at me show. It's like, let's connect. Let's like, I want people to understand me more, you know, but it's very difficult right now because, you know, I have my management being like, you need to promote. And I'm like, how can you ask me back to back with what I just posted to now post my poster now and say buy tickets?
I feel but the same way.
I want to connect with people. That's
yeah, it's a dichotomy, I think, of life. And both of us, I would say, have that voice that, you know, different numbers of people listen to. And ultimately, like, it's accepting that there is a duality. There's going to be guilt. There's, you know, I record podcasts and I'm always trying to feign, like, not feign, but show excitement about the person I'm talking to and the story and the journey and the success and all that. And I'm like, back in my head, I'm like, oh my God, there's like things happening that I can't even fathom.
I canceled a few interviews last week because I was like, what do you want me? I was like, if you put me on, at least right now, I'm like, whatever I say, I'm going to stand behind. But like last week, it was like, don't put me on a microphone or you guys are going to have problems because I'm not okay right now. This is not okay. It's still not okay. And I've had to see too many dead children. Like, oh God, I didn't want to get into this, but it's like, it's sad on every side, bro. It's sad on every side. You know? I'm very sad for what happened. That music festival thing was horrifying. I mean, as a musician, dumbfounded, obviously. But what's happening now is deplorable. It's just, I feel so helpless, you know? And like my friends in India, I feel like are a little disconnected a little bit from it in some ways. I'm saying there's a lot of people who are connected to it, but I feel like it's not part of their everyday life, and I have to keep explaining to them that my tax dollars are involved, and like I can't look away. It'd be easier to, but I cannot look away.
Yeah, me neither. And I don't think we should. Like, it's so tempting to almost be like, oh my God, I can't watch it, but it's such a privilege to look away. And I think we all have that. And at least for me, all I can do is try and talk about it and make it like at the forefront of people's minds where possible. Because ultimately, you're right. Ultimately, it's seeing people who don't deserve what's happening to them.
I mean, outside, okay, this week, this makes me feel almost helpless because it's like you and I talking about this isn't going to end their suffering.
It's not going to do anything.
You know what? I mean, it does do something because people know that human beings, like, at least I hope someone from Palestine hears this and understands that, like, yo, this is, you're upset with, you know, everyone is upset. But what I would say is this. When there are wars and, you know, a lot of the community, like, you know, like in America, how you obviously see this is not supported by the people, you know, and this is not what we want. You also see on the back end of that, like a revolution in art where like artists have to stand up and speak for things. And I feel like I do it in my own way, you know, like I feel like Fearless was a response to things that I was seeing, you know, during the farmers' protest. You know, that was something that I wrote during that time. And, you know, it's about, I realized that, you know, in those moments when people are suffering and there's things going on in the world, art and music is the only thing that transcends, that helps people know that they're not alone. And I just feel like as musicians, as artists, we cannot look away and we have to find our own way to try to bring more light into the world. You know, like, I know some people will say it's trivial, it's just a song, but like some people in those moments, that song is the soundtrack to their life, and it becomes something that helps them get through, because Lord knows there's been songs that have helped me get through, you know, that like people have written that have helped me through the darkest times in my life. And I feel like since I feel helpless that I'm not there, I can't hand them water, I can't make them bread, I can't give them fuel, I can just pray and put that into the art and hope that more people will find that frequency of love and we can return to some kind of sanity. Because I know we're in Kali Yuga, I understand that, but I'm still here and I'm still watching and I still have to feel and do something, you know? So I just don't know about, like, I think like because I used to be so like in my masculine energy, I know that that side of me drains me. So now I'm just observing and letting it come to me to understand what I can do, you know? But I think the one thing that we should do is not be afraid, you know, to speak about it, because I think I know a lot of people are losing jobs and losing, I mean, my entire career is run off of endorsements, and that's what funds this, you know, like music doesn't pay, guys. And, you know, touring is a very, very hard market. You're definitely just losing money to go put the show out there. So, you know, I get money from brands, and the thing is, if it affects it, it affects it, but I'm not okay. I can't be complicit with it. I just can't. But yeah. God will show me how and when to, you know, do my part. But right now I'm just praying.
Sveta, selfishly, now that I have you, and I feel like you're in an industry where a lot of people get quite, they get quite worked up when there's a lot of silence, you know, in times of not just this, but generally in times of conflict. And I was wondering, like, how much of a say do people have versus, like, you know, external voices telling them not to say something? And feel free not to answer it if you're not comfortable.
No, I think to be empathetic to everybody, like, everybody has different situations, you know, like, I think, like, major labels have, like I said, a lot more people involved. Like, I am the head of my label. I run my company. I own my publishing and my masters. So, and, you know, I am my father's daughter. So, I mean, I have a privilege to be able to say what I want.
Right.
Whenever I want to say it. It's a privilege. You know, but a lot of people can't, you know.
Yeah. I hear that. And I think that's something that maybe people don't, like, empathize enough about. But I wanted to talk about your label, because I'm really excited about Godmother Records and what you're planning to do with it. I want to know, like, what is that ethos that you've started it with, and what are you planning to do with it? Who are you planning to bring on, and how are you planning to bring them on?
I love this. So Godmother Records is built to be a safe space for women in music, and it's made out of, you know, a response to what I've experienced, what my friends have experienced. And, you know, it's really a response to what I experienced in India. And primarily, I mean, right now I want to bring up female artists from the diasporas, but in India as well. Like, that's my first focus, because I've seen the scene. Like, I know what I like, because of my American audacity, I was never put in positions that other people are put into. And, you know, the fact that I am outspoken and maybe people fear me a little bit, you know, that has helped me push through. And I've tried in every situation to bring as many female artists with me. I did the Ronnie Cypher. When I got an opportunity with Absolute to do a song, I could have just kept the money and did it myself. But I was like, no, we need a female Cypher. We need to see. And I wanted a big video. And, like, you know, I wanted to do styling for all of them, because, you know, I have access to some things because I grew up in Los Angeles, you know, like, I was at tables with all Grammy Award winners. I was writing in writing camps, and, like, I, you know, saw things that other people didn't get the opportunity to see. So if my dad left and created this opportunity and I want to come home, then I want to, you know, want them to reap the benefits of what I learned, you know? So Godmother Records is focused on music education. You know, I think music infrastructure in India is, like, extremely needed. Like, there's no publishing. The writers are, like, work for hires. They don't make royalties. There's a lot of mess happening on this side. And I feel like everyone that works with me is given their publishing. You know, even, like, my producers are given points on the masters. So we've already started doing business in a different way, because it's abundance mentality. I don't need to hold the whole pot. We actually all need to make a living from music, so music can continue, you know, like, real artistry that's blending and also preserving our culture. You know, that's super important to me, whether it's in classical dance, you know, classical musicians, or our expression, you know, who we are. Because as South Asian stories become told, you know, we see things like RRR at the Oscars and not one Indian dancer on stage. And I feel like that is the trend that will happen if we're not in control of the narrative. And I feel like with the females, like, in India, like, the last 6-7 years that I've been here, and I think India is my learning ground, and it makes me understand what's happening in a larger scale. But, like, sometimes I'd be the only female in the lineup. How? And then the excuse would be like, oh, they're not as good. But it's like, well, are you giving them platforms to perform and learn? You know, are you giving them opportunities on your, like, soundtracks to like keep getting better, you know? Like, so this has been created. Like, I started my first like songwriting workshop. I am writing a songwriting manual that, you know, puts together the last 10 years of everything I've learned from Timbaland, you know, that father in Denmark, you know, what I learned from studying Max Martin as my guru, you know, like whatever. And then how I've applied it in different ways and how to write for film, how to write for, you know, fusion music and like different things that I've learned from every single person I've worked with, from Gwen Stefani to like J.R. Rodham, Justin Tranter. Like, I've been so lucky. So I've like, I'm making this into a manual because I want to distribute it in India. I want to set up songwriting workshops where, you know, people can come and even do songwriting camps, and I can start to create an infrastructure where if you are a musician, you know that there is a road to making this a job. Because like, especially for females, like, you know, there, we can't lose all the art, and it cannot only be from the men because it's missing. Even I was speaking from my masculine side. And now that I'm, you know, in my feminine, I'm like, yo, this is what's missing from the world, you know? And I think when we ascribe to the patriarchy, then you get songs that are focused on the male gaze. So it's like, maybe it's hypersexualized, or maybe it's, you know, it's like violent, or, you know, there's a different, like, or maybe it's like, something that is just not necessarily the expression of the divine feminine, you know? So I feel like, you know, Godmother Records is not just going to be a hip hop label. Honestly, it's just for musicians, and it's going to be like a collective, you know, like Kumari Kids is a program that I've been developing for the last few years, which is going to be a scholarship program that's going to go with this music education infrastructure. And, you know, it's the idea is that like, class of 2024, there'll be some people that are chosen that will have like one-on-one mentorship with me. They become class of 24. And in 25, myself and class of 24 mentors 25. And then we start making this network of female creatives that know each other, because for the last 5 years, I want to say, I have only used all female creative teams. Like from Karma with Sam Madhu, who is an incredible artist that, you know, was, I know, luckily, you know, she was my roommate, you know, I was obsessed with her. She was like a really good artist, my friend. And she lived with me in Bombay because, you know, when she moved to Bombay, I was like, come stay with me. And we did Bindis and Bangles and Karma and that whole time period together. And I feel like during that period, I started working with an all female team. There's always like a few boys in there. It's not like they're not there, but the main creatives. And I just feel like this is important, you know, and it's not like to bash on anybody, but I see that the opportunity is much less and the creativity is much more. So, you know, that's just, it's just a response to the need. And, you know, when I sat on a panel like a month ago, and it was so crazy because it was like my old labels. It was like Universal, Mass Appeal, like me. And I'm like sitting there, Godmother. And I was like, yeah. Like, yeah, guys, you want to talk, right? It was so empowering. And it was funny because every question that stood up, I mean, you have like Universal, you have all these big major labels. Every question was for me. They were like, how can we come to Godmother? And you know what? I am a one woman army. Okay. And I have people I work with. We are building it. But since the goal is so, so important, the foundation, we're taking our time. And I feel like whatever artists, like, first, I want to do a series of songwriting camps that are like open to all female artists that come so I can find more talent. It doesn't have to just be someone I discovered on YouTube. I was never on YouTube. I didn't sing on YouTube. No one would have discovered me. So I see, like, when people ask me, how do you see yourself? Like, I think it's really strange to people sometimes that I don't, like, I wouldn't prefer to live in Los Angeles. I just feel that I have so much to give here. And, you know, like, I feel that, like, if people ask me my legacy, it's like, well, I want to build this infrastructure. You know, I want them to have what I had. Because I got to just, oh, I want to work in Los Angeles. Oh, you're a signed writer? Cool, let me write with you. Oh, your publisher liked the song because they noticed my name was on it. They called me. Oh, now I'm signed. Now I'm writing 2 songs a day. Now my song went on, you know, Fall Out Boy. Now I have a platinum single. Now I'm Grammy nominated. Okay, now I'm signed to label. Like, there's no structure for that. So let me try. That's it. Let me try. That's it.
What are the naysayers saying?
So much. Can't hear them anymore. But yeah, I mean, they don't, I think I've broken so many things. You know, I remember working with people a couple of years ago and they're me suggesting like, let me make you this like, you know, let me make you like a promotional song for this Hindi film where like a Sia, Imagine Dragons, I can do an English for you. I can even get it in Hindi. And they're like, but you're a woman. The main character is a man. How can you sing it? And you know who broke through all that? Shah Rukh Khan. Happy birthday, Shah Rukh Khan. He broke through all of it. That's a man. But didn't he have a female give him his theme song? That's like, now it's like I wrote the theme song for Shah Rukh Khan for life, you know? And it's like, it was years after that conversation that that actually happened, you know? So I think the naysayers, I feel that, I don't know, I feel like as a being the bridge, having one foot in each side, I think I'm yet to understand what the diaspora wants, you know, for me, because I feel I've done everything for the diaspora. Like it was always for us, but somehow I think I'm a little separated from it and I'm trying to integrate in more because I just got really busy here. I put my head down and I just focused on building something, but I think it was always for all of us. And I think after this North American tour, maybe even this sentiment will change. Maybe I haven't performed in the UK. I haven't performed, you know, in North America, really. I haven't done a proper tour. So maybe all of this is just, you know, just me waiting. And maybe I'll find out when I get home that every seed I planted actually, you know, grew.
I was going to say, bro, when are you coming to London to perform?
Shows. I don't know. 1 second. There's too much sun. It's actually getting me hot. I'm like starting to sweat sitting here. I'm like, wait, this is not working for me. We need a little of the golden light though. The sun is okay, it's so beautiful here. Let me just show you. I'm sitting here.
It's lovely. Where is the flat? Oh, is it
Juhu?
Yeah. Oh, it looks lovely.
So the sun is setting, so it's coming right around. It's just like, hey, I'm gonna be in your face. Okay.
You're good. It's
okay. Let's get back. Okay, where were we? I got distracted by my sweat.
Like, we were talking about your tour.
The naysayers.
Why you're not coming to London?
I would. You know, it's the world tour. I want to definitely add dates in London. You know, I'll just be frank. You know, I'm starting over. Like, so basically, the way that things work, and I don't think a lot of people know this, is you need data, right? You need like ticket sale data in order to book the show. So because I haven't had like properly booked shows in America, like I just signed a WME, which is like the biggest agency in the world. So I'm so excited. And they set up this tour. So this is actually like my first proper tour. So if we sell out all the tickets and everybody comes and supports, then I can get bigger places and then I can get shows in the UK properly because, you know, it's so crazy because I'll be headlining festivals and then I'm like, please give me this room with 250 people. I swear to God, I'll do it well. But that's okay. Like, keep me humble. Like, I told myself, like, the same grassroots, like, work I had to do in India where I had to do every job, I have to be willing to start over and do it all over again. And I am. I hope my people come. You know, I hope they come to support because I swear to God, I did it for you guys. You know? So.
It doesn't have to be mutually exclusive, Sveta, because what I'm thinking is you are doing the most for the diaspora by being in India, by representing us in a place where people don't take us seriously in India because they think we have the worst fashion sense in lehengas. We don't really know how to do it.
NRI gate?
I know. NRI gate. Oh my God, I saw that.
I'm familiar. No, I work hard every day to change their opinion on NRIs and fashion. I'm like, no. This is bodice, okay? This is the fresh collection, please.
Do you know what I mean, though? I think you're doing the most. Like, don't doubt yourself because there aren't many people doing in the position that you're in. And call it privilege, call it hard work. I think it's everything. But you're there. So just do it, you know? And as for just like your show in North America, I'm so excited for you. Like, how are you genuinely feeling about it going back?
It's the homecoming tour, you know, and I think it's, you know, God, I always tell everybody that Sky Daddy is my manager and he's the director and my agent. And I just feel like God wrote this in a way for me. You know, I think like, even right now, what I'm experiencing in India, just really feeling like so welcomed and like, you know, with the people I dreamed of meeting and just like having fun with them and just like being at a place like that and just feeling like myself. And then now to go home and have what I know is going to be such a beautiful experience. I'm just so thankful. I'm like, okay, all that suffering, everything I put into the music, it's like, okay, now is the season of happiness. Like now is the season to enjoy and to be proud of myself and not constantly being like, because as a Capricorn, you know, we're mountain goats. And when we get to the top of one mountain, we only exist for the climb. So we look up to the next peak and that process, you know, just doing that, I look back and years have gone by, you know? So I feel like I'm really happy to do this. And I'm hoping that it opens doors to more performances, you know, in the West, you know, because that was the goal. You know, the goal was when I was growing up, I felt like an outsider. Whenever I saw Indians, it was like a tiny moment. And I know that this is, you know, spoken a lot about in the South Asian, you know, story right now, but that was what we were all experiencing. Like I tell people that are my age in India, you don't know how lucky you are that when you see an advertisement, the mom looks like your mom. Do you know how lucky you are? Do you know what it's like that when you look up in the store, they're Indian people? We didn't see ourselves. And on top of that, if we saw ourselves, it was a caricature and we had to accept that. And, you know, and then like the standard of beauty was never anything that was like us. I always tell people, you want to be mad at Kim, but I love Kim. Kim shifted the whole perspective. All of a sudden it was like dark features, curvy. And I was like, wait, that's me. Hold on, wait. I'm beautiful too, you know, like, and I took that and I ran. So God bless Kim Kardashian, okay, yeah, for shifting the narrative. But I mean, like, you know, growing up and just wanting to, you know, also just loving my classical dance, loving my culture, and just feeling like, why is it such a secret to everybody? Like, shouldn't they also know about our temples and our tapestries and our, you know, like, it was so beautiful for me. And, you know, it's a good time. I'll come back to it. I'm just saying that the purpose of this was to, you know, make Indian culture part of the mainstream in a way that we could all be ourselves, not in the mainstream in the way that like it's the flavor of the month, you know, but that's okay. The problem is they opened the door and we all came through and there's too many of them
rushing through with our therapists and Tao, because we're all in therapy.
We're all in therapy. And we didn't just do it in one place. We did it with Hassan. We did it with Mindy. We're doing it with Priyanka. We're doing it in every piece, every place. And the thing is, Brown Illuminati, we all know each other. So we're good.
We do.
Everyone's really somehow we all know each other. So, you know, I think it's a great time. I think about the kids that are like, they're like the TikTok generation, but I'm like, what's it like to grow up with like a TV show? Yeah. Like Never Have I Ever. Like for me, I live in Sherman Oaks. I am a South Indian girl. I was bugging. And then to have my songs in that show, you know, for two different seasons was so much confirmation, you know? So everything is good. Everybody's doing their thing and the best is yet to come. 100%.
How can you say you've not done enough for the diaspora? Like you're going, girl. But I want to ask you about Javan because I think we haven't touched on it yet. What the hell? You sang the title track of Javan. I watched it in the cinema and I was just listening to your voice, like, I think I'm interviewing this girl soon. Like,
not only did I sing it, I wrote it. See, that's the hard flex in this Javan thing. I'll just tell you because it's kind of crazy. We talked about the naysayers. Everyone was saying, you don't sing in Hindi, so you can't impact. Somehow I made a name for myself in English in a place where there's only one English radio station. There were certain channels that wouldn't even play my music because it was in English. Somehow I did this. And then Shah Rukh Khan calls me, and this is so crazy. Because the film was in so many languages, they wanted the song in English so it could just go into every movie. They didn't have to dub it in three languages. So all of a sudden, the thing that was my weakness that you said is my problem, I stuck with it. It became my brand. And when Shah Rukh Khan needed an English song to make his film international, they only had one person to call because I stuck to who I was, you know? And now I'm singing in Hindi and Telugu and everything. Now I'm having fun. Because now I'm like, oh, now I don't care. Now I'll try anything, you know? But, you know, I got the call the day the album was coming out, by the way, and they needed it immediately. They needed it yesterday. So I recorded it on April 20th, the day that the bridge released. I was recording Jovan. I was writing and recording it. And, you know, I knew it was going to be big, okay? But nothing prepared me for watching the screening with Shah Rukh and Deepika, hearing my voice and hearing people going, like, screaming. And then what would follow, you know, with the way that people accepted the song, reacted to the song. And now, like, I don't know, man. I feel like that's going to be, like, a huge moment in my career where, for me personally, like, I have Shah Rukh Khan on my vision board 3 or 4 times. And I have Shah Rukh with his wife and his kids because I was like, oh, this is cute. I want to know him as a person, not just Shah Rukh. And the crazy thing is, Gauri produced it. I met Suhana and Aryan. And it's like, bro, I literally manifested this for myself, you know? But the song is... Okay, I'll say this. I was told 3 things. I know I've told this story, but it's so funny. They call me. They can't tell me anything. They're like, there's a trailer online that's been up for a year. You can go ahead and watch that. The movie's coming out. I'll send you the track. All I can tell you is it's Shah Rukh. He has a band of like bad bitches, but like girls with him. And there's guns. This is what they told me. And you can, and I was like, well, can I like, can we say like King Khan and like the Don? Like, can we like reference him? And they're like, yeah, they're like, just go for it. Reference him. So I got to like break the wall, you know, like it's for writing for a film. Usually you're writing as the character, but then I got to write about Shah Rukh, you know? So I had all the lyrics, like, actually, on the song The Dawn that I released from HBIC, I say, I'm a certified lover like SRK, Bandra Dawn, King Khan. I literally said it. So I was like, oh, I actually have, like, I know exactly what to write about. So I don't know. I think like that project coming to me and it being tailor made for me. And then you've seen the video of him watching me perform it. Like, you've seen the, like, starts with a kiss and then it's like, rewind, how did this happen? You know, like, it's so crazy, but I you could see, I get so excited when I talk about it because it's a specific dream I had. Very specific.
So specific. You manifested it from every angle. And I think, like, you were already doing it. You were already bringing him into your work. So, like, it was only a matter of...
I called him. I'm calling you. I'm a witch. I'm calling you. No, now I feel like those years, the last 10 years, were, like, heavy penance. You know, it was, like, testing me, how much do I believe in this dream? And like now I'm like, okay, now everything is manifesting exactly as my vision board. Like, I have this big vision board I made about 13 years ago. It's like one after the other, whether I'm manifesting it because I kept looking at it or I don't know what, how it works. But now I'm just like, okay, now I just accept it. Like, it's here now. Everything I asked for is here. The last thing is not here. There's the husband, you know, there's the center of the board was like, picture of Aishwarya and Abhishek, and it was like their really nice wedding, and I was like, ooh, bougie wedding. And then it was like them on the red carpet and then them at a temple, and I was like, someone who understands my red carpet life but also is traditional and will, you know, be like, care about culture with me. So we're yet to find this man. We've asked Seemonty. Okay, I met Seemonty about this. What? I'm telling you, it's the crossover you didn't know. It's the collab of the century, me and Seemonty.
Okay. Can we talk about
it? We're going to have a swayamvar, and she's going to find me, my Arjun. She's going to find him. He's going to shoot, you know, he's going to shoot that bow right into the fish's eye. And I'm going to be like, yes. That's
yeah, the plan. Good luck with that.
Hey, I'm manifesting it, okay? It's happening. We're going to come back to this clip.
What are the family saying about the marriage sitch? Are they like, okay, oh, great, man. Well done. You met Shah Rukh Khan, now go get married.
They've been saying that for 10 years. It was like, okay, great. Well done. You got a Grammy nomination. Go get married. Oh, wait, great. Well done. Madhuri Dixit, like our besties, but like whatever. No, they don't care. I mean, now I think therapy, you know, and I think my mom is like inadvertently getting therapy through me because of everything I'm learning. And she's a sweet, sweet woman. And she, you know, loves me so much with all her heart. I feel like they're empathetic now that like, clearly I'm not running interference on this. And like, sometimes they'll be like, you know, you're just too successful to like, and I'm like, if you think I'm too successful to find a man, or you think like I need to lose weight to find a man, I'm sorry. If I have a baby, I'm going to at least get this chubby. Like, if he can't handle me at this point, like, why would I trust him? Like, that's no fair. So if like, I'm happy where I'm at. Of course, I want to become more healthy because I want to like be a martial artist, or I want to do like archery. I have all these weird like super like superhero stuff I want to do now. Like I want to learn like, I don't know, nunchucks or something. So it's like I want to get more fit to do that kind of stuff, or like do like some kind of like combat scene in one of the videos, like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Kumari, you know, like I want to do stuff like that. So, you know, that's fine. But like, yeah, it's weird. I mean, I keep telling people to send their bio data. I don't know. That's why I'm in my feminine. Have you noticed? I'm like, in all my pictures, I'm trying to be like, hey, I won't cut your head off unless you piss me off. I'm trying to receive, you know, I'm trying to receive, yeah. Try not to plan everything. And clearly I'm not on the traditional plan. We left that like a decade ago. So just want to find someone that like, you know, supports my vision and thinks it's important, you know, like thinks that what I want to do for India. And also I don't know, like I think sometimes in the NRI community, sometimes people don't quite understand India. They still look down upon it in some way. They think it's dirty, or like they come here to take and not to give back.
Yeah,
I find that sometimes it's like, what can I get? Let me stack up my whole suitcase and go and sell it there, or wear it there. But it's like, bro, you're here. Soak it up. Like, smile at that random man that's making you pav bhaji, because that's beautiful. Like, connect, you know? And I feel like I don't know. I need to find someone who feels about India the way I do. Because I feel that my life, I mean, I'll always spend a lot of time here. You know, that's maybe not the whole year, but I love India, man. I know people want me to say I like living in Los Angeles. My whole family's there. I like driving my car because the streets are, you can drive there, you know. But something in India just, you know, feels incredible for me.
Do you still have to walk around with a Bisleri bottle? So are you still considered?
No, I eat the street food, man. My parents, I'm like, when they come here, I'm like, you Americans, here's your boiled Bisleri, whatever. But everybody drinks filtered water here. India's changed. Like, even the restaurants, they're going to give you filtered water. You can trust.
You're good. No, India's, I love India too.
Bro. India's a vibe. I think everyone that has these memories from when they're like 9 years old with their parents should come back with their friends and experience real India. And see how fun it is and how free you feel. And like, just, they should spend some time with their friends, like people their own age without their parents. Yes. Then we'll talk about India. Cause then you'll see the India that I see. Cause 60% of the population is under 35, guys. India is changing. We are the largest democracy. Like, there's so much about India. There's so much that you can pick and choose and say, oh, this is upsetting me. This is upsetting me. But there's so much that's happening here. And I don't know. I feel like more people should come back and be a part of it and bring their talents that they learned abroad. If everyone's so ready to tell us to go back home, then come back home.
So true. And actually, I haven't told you this, but I'm a dancer as well. And I'm planning to come to Mumbai soon just to train. So I'll hit you up. You have to take me out because we need to experience Mumbai for what it is. And my main reason for going to India is the food. Even if I'm going to end up shitting it out, I don't care.
Listen, you'll be fine. There's you're gonna, everyone, you don't always get sick, but you might. It's okay. You don't go to like the, I mean, but you might want to go to those places at least once, you know, like, I don't know, but it's fine. You'll be fine. Everything is with filtered water, dude. Even pani puri, they make it with filtered water. Everything is better, guys. Like, it's not the India of when you were 10 years old with no internet stuck at your grandma's house. Like, India has changed, guys. It's a cooler place. Like, the Geo Center, like, the Ambanis, what they have done in this city, like, just everyone should come back once before they talk to me about
it. Love it.
I'm just like, no, guys. I go to cooler park. Like, I have more fun. Like, it's
all I love it. Raja Kumari is advocating for India, guys. We must all go.
I love it.
You can embrace it.
This. I've been advocating for India for so long.
When did you get Bloodline? That?
I got that after my first show in India, because I kept doing interviews and they'd be like, but you're not Indian. You're not Indian. And I was like, that's even why Made in India, I say, dekhna tu mera ye chehra. If I'm not Indian, tell me, what am I? Literally, I am the most traditional Indian face. Like, I'm South Indian AF. So I put it on my bloodline and I would say, check the bloodline. And that's why the album too is called Bloodline, because I had to keep telling people, you want to, because I feel that it's easy. Okay. I feel this happens. If I'm American, like if I'm Indian, then everybody has to come to the standards of what I'm doing. But if I'm American, then they can just kind of go, oh, she's American. So it's always, and it's funny because when I'm in America, they're like, oh, she did that in India. So there's this tendency to kind of just like flick away the things I'm doing, but coming together.
All you got to do is do that to them.
You don't, I always do that. I'm like,
but also, I love India. Yeah. I was going to say, India is Manat for me as well. Because when I go to Mumbai, I go to Manat just to stand outside. You went inside.
I was just like, should I tell you I've been inside Manat? I've been there, of course. I went there. I went for a party, like, after Javon. Like, he had the whole, like, team there. And I sang the song. There is a video, but it's not going out because videos from Manat can't go out now. You know, you have to keep them quiet. But, like, I was singing and it was just me and Shahrukh. They gave me the mic. And I feel like a lot of people, they haven't like experienced, like I always tell people I'm a pop star, guys. Like that's my job. I'm a pop star. I just like pull up and I do crazy things. And I feel like they haven't experienced that kind of energy other than Ranveer. You know, like Ranveer is a pop star, you know? Yeah. And we all, me and Ranveer always say that we're like, I feel like we're cut from the exact same cloth. We're like both crazy people. He's just one of my faves. But I was singing it. And it was like me and Shahrukh, and I don't know. It was just what dreams are made of, babe. What dreams are made of. And yeah. I was in the back, and I was looking at like that cage area, like where he stands. And I was like, and it's so weird because before that happened, like I think like a week and a half before, we were going somewhere. We drove by Manat, and I said, I'm gonna be on the inside looking out. And I was like a week later.
Wow.
It was crazy.
What is it like? What is it like talking to his family? What's he like as a person? Is he like the nicest?
You know, the thing that I realized about Shahrukh and that I try to apply in my life is that when he's speaking to you, he's speaking to you. His eyes are on you. He's focused. They're connected. And I feel like he gives you his darshan. Like he fully gives the darshan. If you came to see Shahrukh Khan, he'll turn into Shahrukh Khan. He'll give you the darshan. And I feel like when I was, I just went on a pilgrimage and I was in Kedarnath and Rishikesh. And I went on, you know, I went to go get a darshan from Lord Shiva, but I felt like when people recognized me there, they were so shocked, like, to see me. But what I understood is when they see me on stage, they actually see the Devi that I am trying to manifest. Like, because as a classical dancer, I can become Devi. In one moment, I can become Devi. So there's no difference. When Rajakumari comes on stage, she's a version of Devi. I'm talking about her as a she because, you know, now it's a character I've created, you know? Mm-hmm. And it represents so much. So I realize when people meet me, they also want a darshan with that character. So I have to leave everything and I look people directly in their eye. I make sure if they want to tell me something, I'm like, let me listen, let me try to remember. I try to do things for them because that's how Shahrukh made me feel, and he makes everyone feel around him like that. Like he's present. That's it. Mm. That man is present.
Mm. Well,
I saw something crazy last night. I'll just tell it because it was so cute. So Tesher was at the party, okay? And it was just me and randomly Tesher, and we kept seeing each other and being like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? You know, like, it was just funny, right? And feel like Shahrukh Khan came on, and we were all dancing, and it was like a ridiculous circle. It was like Shahrukh, and a song comes on, and I see Shahrukh, and he's just feel like Shahrukh Khan. And I was like, what's it like to be Shahrukh Khan right now? He's just chilling, and he turns, he sees Tesher, and he just grabs him, and he like hugs him. And I was like, yo, Tesher just, I was like, yo, Tesher just had his dream moment. Like, Tesher's dreams just came true. He feels like Shahrukh Khan. It was so cute. Like, I was really happy to witness that. I was like, yeah, because I've had those crazy moments, and I don't think anyone's witnessed them. I've just been alone, and I was like, I was happy that I saw it happen. Like, there's no cameras, so, you know, I'm telling the story because there was no cameras. Maybe Tesher won't tell it, but I'm telling it. It was amazing.
No, there was. There was a video that went viral, I think. I don't know if it was the same event. Point? Yeah, there's a video out of Shahrukh Khan and Tesher hugging on a stage.
I'm right there. Let me go look at it. Yeah, I'm right there.
That's why I'm like, this is blowing my mind because I saw this morning on social media.
Cute. Okay, well, they took videos. I don't know. I had my video moment at the Javon thing. I'm like, it's fine.
But I feel like Tesher is a good example of this because he, like, obviously making feel like Shahrukh Khan, like young Shahrukh, sorry. And
yeah,
obviously Jalebi Baby taking like the next step. I really believe in that power of compounding because even from what you're saying, like, your career has compounded to moments where you've ended up in Manat and you're like, what the fuck am I doing here? Because you just kept putting it in and believing, right? That you
do
it. And I guess you have to be a little bit like screw loose in the head to
No, that's the requirement, because that's why I always say I have to have the audacity to believe in myself. You have to have the audacity, because I always tell people, if an idea pops in your head, you didn't make it up, bro. God gave it to you because he knows you're worthy. Now it's your decision to decide if you're worthy. If you're like, wow, I could do that, you say it out loud. Once you say it out loud, it becomes real because your words are powerful. That's why we shouldn't say negative things about ourselves. So the second you say, like, I'm going to be inside mud looking out, I could have just kept that thought to myself, but I said it out loud. So it started it into motion, because the universe is always conspiring to give us what we want.
Yeah. Yeah. I need
it to. It may take a year. Yeah. It may take a year. It may take 10 years, but everything you say will happen. If you have that intention, you're like, I'm aligned. I am present. I am having a human experience. And I know that this world is my oyster. So whatever I say, the universe is conspiring with me to make it happen. So if I doubt myself, like, why would Shahrukh ever invite me to his house? Then, girl, you're not getting there. Why would Shahrukh invite me to his house? Because I'm the best. And because he wants to be friends with me. Because I'm so much fun. That's the way to get it. That's how you get what you want. That's it.
What about gatekeepers and privilege? Ugh.
They're everywhere. Sorry, I like visibly made it like a vomit. So I have been dealing with gatekeepers. If I told you the atrocities to how many, I had a feature with French Montana. I had songs with Wiz Khalifa. I have songs with all these people. They never came out. There are so many issues with administrative egos. Everyone wants it to be their thing. That's why I left the major label, because all this dance of egos of men, how can it hold back my art when it's my dharma? It's literally my duty, my sacred duty on earth is to make this art. And you guys want to mess around with your egos. Like, gatekeepers are there. And even gatekeepers are in our own, like, our own diaspora, like, I feel like. And that's why, like, with the bridge, like, everything I'm doing and what I hope to create in America too is, like, I want my shows to be like a mela. Like, I want, like, a bunch of South Asian artists to be there. I want to have different South Asian, like, you know, companies and chai and different stuff, because we didn't have this stuff. I was the Indian club president in college. I used to run the culture show. So, like, I used to make baby versions of this. So, you know, on my tour, this upcoming tour, I made an open call to all, like, South Asian dancers, because when I was in college, I didn't have fusion music to choreograph to. So that's when I started making it for my dances. So, I mean, I was like, well, for this tour, like, I made it for you guys, actually. Like, I've always wanted to know, you know, I always wanted, like, nobody had juckies on hip hop for me before. I had to make it. And now I've made it. So, like, I want college teams or, like, groups of whatever. I want people to be on stage with me, dancing with me to this music, because it's supposed to be a homecoming celebration. Like, I want it to feel like, you know, this 10 years that I was, like, living abroad, now I'm the prodigal son, I'm returning, and I just want to feel the love. And I want people to know that, like, I think in the beginning, there was a lot of, like, people wouldn't let each other through because they were scared, like, there's only one, there'll be one person that'll make it. But I'm not of that. I don't know how that may have been projected, maybe because I had an aggressive character. But, like, I really want everyone to get on. I know that I'm unique, and whatever I do, even if people wore the exact same outfit as me, they still won't be me. So, like, I've finally come to a place where I'm secure, and it's like, I hope people understand that, like, I am still trying to create a platform. And I feel like we all have a lot to learn from each other. You know, like, I'm not in America. And I see, like, the younger artists, and, you know, they're so confident. They're like, talking about sexual stuff, and they're like being sexy, and I'm like, yo, my parents would have whooped my ass. Whatever you've seen me do is a reaction to my parents. Like, even to this day, I have to print out the lyrics to my album and send it to them, and if there are bad words, I have to discuss with them, like, okay, I use this because I know the song Nazr says fuck about 100 times, dad, but this is being used. It's an artistic tool, okay? Like, it's a thing. I can't be doing those things, but yeah. Power to the kids that have got their parents in check, because, see, this is progress. They get to express themselves. We come from a different generation where,
oh my God, I was
changing my outfit when I would come out in one outfit, change, and come home in the, you know, I'm from a different era. We weren't allowed to, you know, do all that. So
we are that era. My mom watches all my podcasts.
My mom watches all my posts and my friends' posts, and she's so cute though, because she's in America and she doesn't like get to be with me all the time. And then it's cute. She'll be like, "You got a present, and also Mira got one. I saw both of you open the same package." I'm like, "Yes, mom. We were both sent the package. Yes, mom." You know, she's very cute. She knows. She was like, when John Legend was there, she was like, "John." She was like, just, she loves being Mama Kumari. She loves it.
What a mood. But like, I wouldn't have it any other way. I know we're in therapy, but I like our generation. I think we have a lot of fuel with which we can make art, which is great.
Yeah, and it's okay because shit, we're gonna be the elders at some point, and it's good. It's good that we know we're holding this, and the future is bright. Like, what do you do when what happens with kids that see themselves, right? They don't have that innate like shame or like something going on. They're like, "We're Indian." Like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, and imagine like all the men that were showed before, they're always nerds or like, you know, like, and then now it's like, you know, Ram Charan is like, you know, everyone's like in love with him, and like, you know, like Kumail when he like got all buff, and it's like, yes, like now if young Indian boys are seeing Indian men not like emasculate, like is it emasculate? Demasculate? What is it? Emasculated, yeah. I'm like, grammar check. Yeah, like young Indian boys, like not seeing, you know, seeing Indian men be desirable. What is that doing for them? You know, like, and so we can say, oh, the generation's like this, but I'm like, no, like, what's gonna happen? They're coming from this secure space and this like pride, like, paired with us, with like us fighting and keeping on to that culture, like something amazing is gonna come. You know, so I'm very optimistic about the future generations because it worked. Whatever we were doing, we did it. They have it now. So now we got to enjoy it. Like, this is what we wanted to make, you know?
I couldn't agree more. I think their neurons are wired differently, but it's working. And we'll see how they are in the workplace and as parents. But for us, we're fighters.
But we're going to be the dadis when they're parents, so we're fine. We can be the judgmental dadi kimas. I'm ready.
I'll wait to be a dadi. I don't know. How do you feel? Do you think you're going to be like a judgmental auntie, like, or a dadi that's like, why have you come home late? Or like, who are you hanging out with?
I think I'm already a judgmental auntie. I don't know. I'm just like, No, I think it's going to be fun. We're all going to be tatted. Like, the whole dadi gang is going to be tatted. Like, what are we going to be? We're all going to be doing kitty parties. Like, Babu the painter, me, full fuck. Like, you know, like, what are we going to do? We're all going to be thinking about, like, remember that time at Coachella? Like, what are we going to do? We're all going to be, I went to Burning Man. What am I going to say to these kids? You know, like, it's good. It's a good vibe. It's a good vibe.
You breed. Svetha, I never told you, but I actually found out about you in a show that you opened for A.R. Rahman. So I'd actually never heard of you before, but I was in the audience and you walked up and you, I didn't know who you were. And I was like,
I had the peacock crown and the big cape.
Yes. You came in like this and we were like, who is this person? And I don't think ever in my life I've seen like a new artist live that A, I've never heard of, B, has like had an impact, and C, I'm bloody talking to right now. Like, it was wild because I remember that image of you walking on and you were like, I'm Raja Kumari, and I was like, like that stuck in my head. So I think you had an impact on people offline, like back in the day, and I just want to say, like, thank you firstly for everything you're doing, because I don't know if people thank you enough or if people acknowledge enough. I know you doubt yourself at times. It came through in our
conversation. We're human.
We all do, and it's part of the generation we're in as well.
Yeah.
What would you say to young Svetha?
Oh my gosh. You know, it's so crazy. I if we were on the phone, I'd show you. I keep a photo of myself when I'm about 10 years old practicing on the piano, and I talk to it all the time. I'm like, yo, we made it. We literally made it. What I would tell young Svetha is that it's going to be a journey. You're going to learn a lot about yourself. It may not be what you think it's going to be, but it's going to be better. And just stay focused. And, you know, your love for India will play a big role. Yeah. You know, so don't lose it.
Yeah. That's beautiful. We talked about the last 10 years. What about the next 10 years?
Coming out. Godmother. That's the gut. See, that's like a new character I've created. Like, you know, Raja Kumari, she's there. She's like Mahisha Sarmardini. Whenever you need someone's head cut off, she's showing up, you know? But Godmother is, I see myself one day with like all gray hair with a black streak, you know, one day, maybe later, not in 10 years. I'm fine right now. But in the next 10 years, I want to see myself establish this music infrastructure and education system in India. I want to, you know, I want to find, you know, a young artist, a young girl in India. And, you know, my dream is that, like, okay, obviously I would love to win a Grammy. You know, I've been nominated once. I'd love to win as a writer. I've never been nominated as an artist. I would love for myself, but I came from America. I came from a lot of opportunities. I came from a pedigree of writers and all this stuff. I want to see a girl that, you know, I found that went through like my songwriting program, my camps, and the opportunities I gave her. I want to see her win a Grammy. I feel like I'm gonna get teary. That would be so crazy.
Yeah. It's a matter of time. Your Grammy's there, you're here, and you'll.
Mine, I'm like, God will give me. God will give me when the time is right, when I've done my, you know, when. Because it's on my vision board, so I don't doubt it anymore because I stopped doubting him. But I think in the next 10 years, I just want to create an infrastructure. I want to see more rights for writers here. And I want to see, you know, I used to say like, oh, one day when I'm at like the peak of my career and I'm doing like Madison Square Garden and like Wembley, I want to like do this tour and I want to like donate the entire proceeds from the Los Angeles show. Like I have all these like crazy visions of like doing these like really magical things, and you know, having lotuses that open and all these dancers and classical and just like stuff Katy Perry did with big inflatables, but me with Indian stuff. And like I have this vision, so I hope I get the chance.
You will. Don't even say hope. It's gonna happen.
No, it's difficult, babe. It's difficult on this. Like I hope. I think I desire. I think those are good energies. I hope and I desire to fulfill that vision. But I'm happy. Like, I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And, like, I think success is so relative. Like, oh, one person is like, oh, my God. You know, I'm like, I don't know. It's like, oh, this hasn't gotten a million views yet. I don't know. This must be a failure. Like, I'm going through this, like, because I'm independent now. I don't have the major label strong arm to, like, put me on all the playlist covers and give me my 2 million views in 24 hours. Like, I don't have that right now. So everything is organic. You know, everything is real. And I would just say, like, you know, there's a lot of people, like, you know, who books you for festivals. Everything has to do with, there's a lot of gatekeepers. And when you, I think, like, some things can't be contained, and you know what? Fuck it. I believe it. It will happen. I just, you know, you see it. I'm just going through it. I know there's a lot ahead of it, but I don't have any other plan. Mm-hmm. So all I know is I'm going to steadily put one foot in front of the other and just, you know, stay happy and present in the moment, learning from Shah Rukh Khan. And, you know, just so thankful, like, for the projects I'm doing. Like, by the time this airs, I did a song for Sushmita Sen's Aria, and I got to write this like theme song for her, and I sang it in Hindi, and it like makes me feel so powerful to sing in Hindi now. And like, I want to sing in Telugu and all the things that, you know, people said that I couldn't do it. I'd like to do it. And, you know, I sang in Spanish a tiny bit on the album, mm-hmm. La India, but you know, I want to sing in as many languages as I can. You know?
Yeah. Qué bonita la India. Do you know, I've actually grown up hearing that. So whenever it's like, eres Hindu, and I'll be like, sí, soy de la India. And they'd be like, qué bonita la India. Like, quiero ir a la India. And it's very, very interesting when I heard you say it from like your voice, because I was like, yeah, that's relatable.
Yeah. So basically there's two Spanish people in that core team. So Humberto de los Rios, Birdie, he is my one of my best friends since high school. We started making hip hop music together. So we had a group called Styles Bliss, Raja Kumari and MC Bird. And it's actually a melody that we wrote back then.
Mm.
This came the, if I die before I wake, I pray this melody carry my soul away to La India. Que bonita la India. And when we were making the album, I was like, yo, remember that thing we wrote when we were kids? It's like, dude, it was the last thing we recorded for the album, actually. It's the last thing that we did for the album. And yeah, it was just, it's just, I actually, one of my nicknames is Lines. It's one of the things that Birdie called me.
Yeah. So sweet. I mean, I felt completely, as a Spanish Indian, so represented.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, because I mean, I grew up in California, so I feel like I always make jokes. I'm like, I am Mexican because I'm like, because Birdie's my best friend. I grew up in his house, and like, you know, growing up, we had like a nanny that was Mexican. She would make me like home cooked like enchiladas from scratch. So I was like, no. I'm talking real deal. Like, so to me, like, Spanish culture almost feels like home culture to me too. So I can't, like, I need both in my life.
Oh,
we got to talk more about this. I want to be seeing that.
I know. Well, whenever you come to London, we will.
We'll do the La India tour, you know? Yeah. Just go for
it. Sweta, aka Rajakumari, this has been such a wonderful hour and a bit. I don't want this to end, but I feel like we've
you're coming to Bombay, so we're gonna start it out.
I will hit you up. But I think the last thing I wanted to ask you is something I ask all my guests, which is, what do you have strong game in?
Do I have strong game in? Confidence. I have strong game in manifestation. I feel like manifestation is real, and I will stand by it, and I will teach the methods. But yeah, I have a strong manifesting game.
Yes, and it's working. So yeah, I hope people take something out of that.
I'm here to, I'll keep sharing the tips. They're not supposed to be, you know, gate kept. And I just want to send love to everyone. I hope all your manifestations come to fruition, and just believe in yourself, have the audacity to believe in yourself, and you will see things shift.
Well, we are sending love right back to you. Keep doing what you're doing. Follow your gut. Don't be scared. And I know it's easier said than done, but we're backing you. Everybody's backing you. And the haters are going to sit there, whatever. But you do your thing. And looking forward to your dance moves as well on the tour, hopefully.
Oh, yes.
Good luck for it all, Sweta.
Thank you.
Such a wonderful time chatting to you today. And hopefully when you're in London, we'll do it again in person.
Yes, I want to come. I mean, like, I need to come to London for shows. So let's manifest a London, like a UK tour. I would love to be like in Leeds, in Manchester, in Wolverhampton. I don't know. I'm just saying. Bradford. I'm coming.
Love it for you. All right. Take care. All right,
bye.
We'll see you very soon on the stage.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Brown Game Strong. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to stick around, then please do hit the subscribe button if you're listening on YouTube. And do give the social links a follow as well. We're on Instagram and on TikTok. If you have any thoughts, feedback, advice, any potential guests that you'd like to hear me speak to, then please do drop a note on either the socials or on browngamestrong@gmail.com. Thank you once again for listening, and really appreciate your support.